Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Trip. On a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the news, so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, North Bay Station Jacks. I'm tomorrow. Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures down 9. NASDAQ Futures down 41. We're down a lot more than that last night. NASDAQ futures were down 100 and something as Micron came out with bad revenue projections, and they were down, I'm thinking, 15 to 20. We also have Dan Janitas in studio today, and we have Michaels on the line. So we're loaded up today for a really, what did Ed Sullivan you say, for a big show? We're going to get a really big show today? I don't know if I quite have that accent, but nor do I want it. Lou, how are you?
I'm good. Good morning, Dan. And
good morning, Lou.
I love that opening clip because I think that restarted Leslie Nielsen's career. Movie.
Oh yeah,
absolutely.
What was the
Surely you can't be serious.
Yeah, you can't. And was that the same one with I picked a bad day to quick sniff and glue or something?
Oh yeah, a guy from Sea Hunt, Lloyd Bridges.
The guy from Sea Hunt. You're right though. I watched that show religiously when I was a kid. Was that the greatest show ever? Every night, every day, the guy would like, all right, you can't go down that deep. Oh, yeah, I can. It'll be some huge experimental dive, and down he went.
It wasn't until I actually started scuba diving on my own and dove into a kelp bed that I realized that you weren't really in any danger of getting entangled in kelp.
God.
It seemed like every episode he was wrestling with some giant kelp frond.
Well, he's the dad of Jeff Bridges. I mean, there's quite the family there.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, yeah. Bridges was that they had Bridges in there. They had was it Robert Mitchum who played the backup pilot that shows up at the tower wearing two pair of sunglasses.
Yeah.
I mean, they were just that movie
and Kareem.
Can you
imagine him and June Cleaver talking about speaking jive in today's world?
No, I don't. I don't think you could. I don't think you could run a movie like that. Well, I mean, you could make a movie like that, but it wouldn't be made in Hollywood. They couldn't put something like that on.
Well, you know, there's actually reasons, financial reasons, other than whatever other reasons. But I always thought that no matter who you are, having the ability to laugh at yourself is healthy. But I guess that's not anything that's
the modern progressive is singularly unhumorous.
Yeah.
Unless it's some horrible attack on like some personal attack on somebody on the right.
Yeah, I mean I don't get the ability. I mean, I don't have a problem poking fun at Irish people or Italian people.
Yeah.
Everybody, you know, it's just a.
Yeah, great.
I mean, it's just a way to laugh at your. Everybody has idiosyncrasies, anyway. But the you guys could maybe agree or not, but I think the chances of a movie like that, money wise, because since most movies now, what are they, Dan? Are they half overseas usually? Isn't that the average?
Probably, yeah.
I mean, there's
close
no,
to that, yeah.
There's no way on earth anybody has any idea what that humor even is.
Absolutely agree.
In China, Japan, and other places. That's why.
Yeah.
Every movie is blowing people up, four pages of dialogue, because then you don't have to worry about it. It's, I mean,
so, so let me just where I actually think in terms of just watch of just entertainment, visual entertainment, we are in a sort of a golden age of streaming, and I you raise an interesting point on cultural sensitivity and understanding. So I'm watching a series called Tokyo Vice, which let me just recommend that to the listenership if you have not seen it. It's on Max, but you can stream the whole thing. They're running a 7-day free trial, and you can screen if you binge. I think you can catch both seasons. There are only two seasons. It was written for two seasons. You can catch two seasons in a week, but it's an autobiographical story, based on a true story, unquote, of an American reporter who is fluent enough in Japanese that he gets a job with the leading Japanese daily in Tokyo in the mid-90s, and they assign him to the police beat, and so that's why it's Tokyo Vice. It is brilliant.
Really?
But what I, you know, it is very, very Japanese centric, and I, you know, I lived in Japan for a couple of years in the late 80s, and they absolutely nail Japanese culture, Japanese, you know, mannerisms, the intricate interaction between the Japanese police and the Yakuza. It is a fascinating movie or fascinating series, but I thought very much what you thought, Tom, which was, is this, I mean, I think it's the production values are terrific. I think it's Michael Mann was one of the producers.
Really? But he's still alive?
He was when this was made. Right. This is what, 2 years old, 3 years old? But it's, I was just thinking to myself, does this, you know, for the average American viewer, does this translate well? I mean, obviously people who have been to Japan would eat it up, I think, because you just look at it and go, oh yeah, I remember that. But it's really it really is an excellent series. But your issue there, I think with Airplane it would be harder, because the jokes, first of all, if you're not familiar with the culture, you don't have time to think about the jokes. The jokes are just coming 1, 2, 3, oh, yeah, 4, 5. I mean I just thought about another one that would not make it, probably.
Well, even Caddyshack. Does anyone have any idea what all that's about? Oh, yeah. If you're from Europe or Japan.
Well, that's right. Or Animal House, yeah, which plays into, you know, the originator, which plays into certain tropes. I was just thinking of the scene in the Airplane where she's handing out reading material on the airplane, which of course is again something that is so totally foreign to a modern traveler. But she asked the guy, would you like something light? And he goes, sure. She goes, I have a handout on Jewish sports legends. And she basically hands the guy a little pamphlet.
Yeah.
You know, there's no...
That's great.
No content whatsoever.
I picked the wrong week. Quit sniffing glue.
Yep.
What were the jokes of the... Oh, God. I probably shouldn't even say that. The smallest books in the world was... something about... African American yachtsman I've known, and you know,
that's right. Yeah. It's like, you know, yeah.
But anyway, but I mean, it's, but I mean, that stuff. You know, I once in a while, if I really want to laugh, I'll sneak a thing of Amos and Andy on YouTube. And you know what? I know that it has.
I'm amazed that YouTube even allows that content. But these days.
You know who agrees with me on this is Jesse Jackson. He's like, these guys were great actors. It was good writing. It's fun to watch. Because, yeah, everybody knew things were separate back then, and you know the situation.
But when did they switch on the TV show? When did they switch from the guys in blackface to black actors?
Boy, I don't know. I thought they were black.
I thought they were in blackface. I thought they were blackface for like the first year or two.
I don't know. But, you know, I always thought that when you have all those traditional comedy shows, and probably if you actually had a comedy show today, there's always the three parts of it. There's a somebody in control, somebody who's a goofball, and somebody who tries to keep it all together. It's like the three personalities of males. Everybody can see themselves in the Three Stooges in one of the three guys, right? I mean, And honeymooners were somewhat different because the women were, they were the Larry. They were the people that brought it all together at the end between the guy running the, trying to run the show and the goofball, right? And then Amos and Andy was the same thing. The Kingfish was Ralph. Andy was the guy running around chasing all the girls and everything. He was the goofball. And Amos was the cab driver that somehow got them all back together in one piece at the end of the show, right? But it's
yeah. So the original movie, and they made an original movie, did feature two guys in blackface.
Okay. I thought his buddy Calhoun was a riot, the fourth guy. Anyway, but can you tell me this? What was the name of the Kingfish's lodge?
Oh, I have no idea. I was not aware of Amos and Andy until well into my 20s, so I didn't watch it.
Oh, okay, because the Mystic Knights of the Sea. What a great name, huh?
Yeah, that's a fantastic name. It's right up there with what was the lodge in the Flintstones?
It was the Water Buffaloes.
The Water Buffalo. Yeah. That's right. That's right.
And remember, and Ralph was the raccoons.
Yeah.
Ralph and Norton were the raccoons.
I'm thinking Flintstones, not...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Honeymooners was the raccoons, and Honeymooners was... Right. Flintstones was the Water Buffaloes.
Water Buffalo, okay.
Did they even have Water Buffaloes back then? I guess they did.
No, I mean that whole thing, cartoon, was one giant chronological screw-up with dinosaurs, people, water buffalo, and a bunch of other stuff running around.
It also, I think... I'm not positive on this. I think it was the first primetime show where the husband and wife slept in the same bed.
That might be right. I mean, it was
prime time.
It's so funny to think. Oh, I know it was. It's so funny to think it may have. The Flintstones may have been. I can't remember if it was the Flintstones or Johnny Quest, but you had two Hanna-Barbera cartoons that were run in prime time, which is just unthinkable.
I think Huckleberry Hound was prime time.
Except we have The Simpsons.
Yeah, I think Huckleberry Hound was prime time. It was right after the news. It was early. It was like 6:30 to 7.
Well, maybe in Chicago. Not where I was.
Well, you were in Russia.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
I was in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
God. Hey,
both in terms of weather and in terms of government.
We have a lot of legal questions for you this morning. Dan and I were talking about it actually before the show started. What... And this Supreme Court corruption case yesterday, and the reason why I'm going to dig into this a little bit is it really, I think, according to everybody last night, I was trying to catch up on this. I was hoping to see all my judge buddies last night, but evidently because the one judge's daughter died in that sailing accident, I think last night's judge thing might have been canceled.
What sailing accident?
These two ladies, they evidently were expert sailors and you know, I guess really good swimmers, put a small boat in Evanston, and we're going to sail up to Winnetka. And somewhere up there, the wind changed or something. The thing must have capsized 2 miles off, and I don't know if they didn't have any communication or their communication got dumped in the water or what. But they decided to swim in from 2 miles, and the one lady made it, and the other lady didn't. And it's my buddy Mike Boland's daughter.
All right, so they would have had life jackets.
They had life jackets on, yeah.
Was it hypothermia?
I don't know, but I'm guessing. That would be my guess. But I mean, the water got rough too, so who knows?
Yeah, but in a life jacket,
you should be. But I mean, 2 miles is kind of away if it's cold water.
If it's cold water, that hypothermia could have. It's terrible.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry.
But I mean, I keep thinking of things. Maybe they did wrong, but then again, they're expert sailors and everything, and I'm sure they did everything right. It just didn't work.
You know? Well, Evanston to Winnetka is hardly a race across Lake Michigan.
Right. But they were in a 12-foot boat.
Yeah.
But without a motor.
Yeah. Well, that may have... Anyway.
Yeah. But anyway,
so
but this whole...
What's the legal question?
Well, the Supreme Court yesterday, I sent you that thing. I don't know if you had a chance to read it.
Yep, I did. I didn't see... Oh, hold on. I didn't read the link. I was looking at the case yesterday. Just trying to
evidently
make sure I understood exactly what had happened.
Actually, question number one is, what is a corruption case doing in front of the Supreme Court anyway? Isn't that something that comes out of Congress? That would be question number one. But evidently, there's this federal corruption statute, and people have been using. Matter of fact, those are the basis of the charges for Madigan. I don't know about Eddie Burke. I think that might be slightly different. But Madigan, these are like the basis of like all the charges. And what they're saying now is, if somebody, because it was an Indiana case where somebody, I don't know if it was a power company or what it was. It's in the article. Greg, how about sending that out if you don't mind? It was in the article and it had to do with some guy got $10,000 from some utility or somebody, like after the fact. And the Supreme Court essentially said, you can't use that as a corruption case because you can't really prove quid pro quo. And they said it was more of a gratuity than a payoff because it happened after the act was passed or something along those lines. And how Clarence Thomas could vote or anything like that, I'm stunned. But is it possible, Lou, that in our lifetime, I think Pelosi, Phil Graham, who's the other McConnell, whose spouses made all this money, and all these people in Congress making this dough, we have totally, any young people and any old people that read anything, have zero respect for these people. Which is wrong because probably 80% of them are still fine. But the fact
zero
is,
respect for which people?
The people justices? In Congress. People in Congress. We've had a few people take down the presidency by making so much dough and doing all this crap being in there from Hillary on to these two guys running. And now you've got the Supreme Court essentially
I don't think Trump's been accused of being bribed.
No.
Biden has. And well, I think but probably,
he,
but.
He has been accused of, when he was in office, doing his personal stuff, and oh, by the way, favoring people that he invested with him before. And I'm saying, just in general, we're not talking about Harry Truman. You know, and people's respect for the office. And
no, but okay. Harry Truman was not running a billion-dollar business operation before he came in either. So let me just look at the what happened and what you see happening with that case. Is what I consider to be overreach by the Department of Justice manufacturing a crime using a statute that wasn't really applicable. And that's where the court went. This group of justices is, and they've done this in a number of cases. The conviction of what's-his-face in Virginia, the former Virginia governor, Bob McDonnell, they dumped that conviction. They've dumped a couple of other convictions, or at least sent very powerful signals that they are looking at the exact letter of the law. And if DOJ comes in, and it's always prosecutors, comes in and says, look, we're going to stretch the meaning of this term. And by the way, this particular decision has some gives us a little bit of an indication as to where they're going on the January 6th case as well. But where DOJ is stretching the coverage or definitions under the law to dragnet people in, the Supreme Court's having none of it. They're saying, look, the law is the law. You guys can't come out here and contort the language of the statute or contort the perception of the conduct to shoehorn it into what's covered by the statute. It's a due process violation. This is why it's a state court. But even state law processes have to follow the requirements of the Bill of Rights and the 14th Amendment. It's a due process violation, and we're not gonna let you get away with it.
I don't disagree with that at all.
That's the generic look at what was going on. The specifics are, this guy was. And it has to do with the criminal definition of a gratuity versus a bribe.
Right.
And a gratuity is paid after the fact, and a bribe is paid before the conduct.
It has to do with whether or not you can match the two up.
Well, right. And that's the case in both of them. But the criminal statute that this guy was convicted under was for bribery, and the fact is that he was paid afterwards, supposedly. That was a gratuity, and there are different elements for each of those cases. And the court said, you charged them under the wrong thing, and you convicted them under the wrong thing.
So how do we get from...
For those of us who have no idea what you're talking about, who's getting accused of what?
Oh, sorry.
That's why I said send it out.
Mayor of Portage, Illinois.
Portage, Indiana.
Convicted. His name is Snyder.
Portage, Indiana.
Illinois. Excuse me. His name is Snyder. He's convicted of getting a kickback from a trucking company that he favored with city contracts, and so it was paid after the fact. He was charged, as I perused the case yesterday and looked at it, he was charged under a bribery statute, and they're not the same thing. And he was convicted under that statute, and the feds came in and said, you know, this is the same kind of conduct, you know, it sort of fits in here, much like they've done with...
So gratuities aren't illegal, but bribes are?
No. Gratuities can be illegal, and states make gratuities illegal, but they're different things, and this federal statute that he was charged under criminalizes different conduct. And so the court said you can't... One's not like the other, and you can't do this.
It wasn't so like he got the envelope and changed and gave him the deal the next day. It's in matching them up. It's the timing issue, right, Lou?
Well, timing is important. It's one factor. There are obviously other elements. I mean, timing is irrelevant if you have, for example, an email that says, "Hey, Bob, here's the $5 million in exchange for that vote,"
right? Oh,
that
yeah.
You gave us, you know, 6 weeks ago. The timing's irrelevant in that case. You have a smoking.
Well, when I mean timing, it's according to the article, it's matching it to being a quid pro quo. You got paid for this,
right?
That's right. What I meant by timing.
Lou, is the amount important? Because in this case, it was what, $13,000. You know, it wasn't like he was getting millions of dollars. What is the amount? Does the amount become relevant?
I don't. Well, the amount is relevant in the sense that you're looking for some kind of comparable kickback in exchange for the gratuity that was granted. So, you know, if this guy had steered $1 million in trucking contracts to this trucking company, and they gave him a $25 coupon to Olive Garden,
right?
You probably would not look at that as a gratuity, because the amount is ridiculous. There are other ways of connecting the dots on this, but yeah, the amount is relevant. A number of these statutes contain, for example, sort of a de minimis number.
Yes,
in the federal government, it used to be $25. You know, you could accept a meal from a contractor or somebody like that.
What are we, Dan, in our industry? We're 50 or 100 or something?
We are, and as a buy-side portfolio manager, we were always given, like back in the 80s, we were given gifts, and my mentor in the business said, use your conscience, but then I guess that depends on what your conscience is.
Depends on if you have one or not.
I mean, that was back in the day when we had a more homogenous culture, too.
Absolutely.
With an understanding of, well, people said, you know what, there's a sense of shame here that we don't want to engage in.
Yep.
So you don't want to be the guy who gets shamed. That went out the door with the Clintons. But
well, we have been, I mean, one of the, you're always saying exactly correctly, what the hell is the theme of this show? One of it is it, this stuff is, what is corruption? What is the definition of this stuff? So if you're, one thing about the trading floor is the first thing somebody would say when a new rule came in is, okay, what's the workaround, right? Basically what the Supreme Court is saying, well, first of all, is that Clarence Thomas is off the hook. They're saying that. But it's very difficult to match this stuff up. Now, Janet Yellen was the head of the Federal Reserve for a while. She is not there anymore, and she gets $7 million in speaking engagements. And believe me, I wouldn't pay 40 cents to hear a lady speak, but from people she supposedly was regulating in some way, you know, indirectly, and then immediately gets the job as a Secretary of Treasury, which again puts her in a semi. Now,
Ben Bernanke was like $20 million in
yeah, but he never went back into government. She did, so he didn't flip back in. It's almost as bad, Greg, but it's not the same as saying, "Oh, now that you got the money from the people you know, you can count on, you're back in." But I'm saying now, in the case of a, if I'm Commonwealth Edison, because they're the bad guys in the Madigan case, first of all, they're let off the hook. But what that says to me is that if somebody comes in, if Greg Pappas, the young guy, runs for state rep or state senator, I'm just going to pay him every single campaign so I can count on him all the time, because then there's no quid pro quo. That's not fighting corruption, Lou. What is that?
It's something else, but, you know.
I mean, it stinks like a fart in church, but, I mean, it's... I mean,
you know, the fix is state laws. The states criminalize this kind of conduct. It's not a. It's
no,
not
they
a
don't.
Problem.
A campaign corruption. They don't.
That was, well, okay. You can criminalize that kind of conduct if it's a straight. If it's a payoff. If it's a bribe, and if you can show the connection.
I'm saying if you do it every time, all the time, and you take 25 senators, and every campaign you give them $100,000 a campaign. You're just paying for it. You love them. You're in office. You think they're straight people. And all of a sudden, by the way, they always vote for you.
What's the line from Paul Newman film, Absence of Malice? Yeah. I like their work. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, because the judges, we're going to go to break, but ponder this. State Farm, you know, by the way, I have my insurance and stuff with State Farm forever. They are big contributors to some of these judges' campaigns. And I'm going to say some of them might end up at 26th Street. I don't know if they can't contribute for those. But all they do is, you know, all they do, they do murder cases and armed robberies, and they never, State Farm never gets anything out of them. But all of a sudden, once in a while, somewhere is in the Chancery Division or someplace, and a State Farm case drops in front of them, and they go, oh, no, I'm not recusing myself. I guess if you don't have a law and you don't have people's morals, what are you left with here?
Tom, the good people of Illinois have voted a constitution in a constitution that allows for the election of judges. And when you allow for the election of judges, you open the door to this stuff automatically.
Well, but if you don't elect them, they're being appointed by other people you elected, you just pay those guys off. I mean, that's what I'm saying about being a trading guy. Dan and I know just how to get around this stuff.
Well, I mean, there's an answer to that. You know, the answer is a
guillotine?
No, a dictatorship. You have one guy. You know, it doesn't matter. Like Vladimir Putin. People pay off Vladimir Putin, but I'm pretty sure they're not paying him off for local judgeships.
No. Anyway, SP Futures down 7, as if he's down 34. We'll be right back.
See how we solve these problems?
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. We have Dan Janitas and
studio. We got Greg Pappas on the board, and we have Lou on the phone, and we're talking about a lot of stuff here that impacts a lot of people. I don't know anything much we can do about it, but it certainly impacts. SP futures down 675. The NASDAQ futures down 30. We were down over 100 as Micron has made its way back to only being down 776. Buy the dip. Buy the dip. That still appears to be the mantra. The Dow we have down 85. Individual stocks in the Dow. Goldman Sachs down $7. It's, you know, it's $400 and some, so it's not like it's a lot. That would be the one. And we've got Visa down 620. And what, Dan, what's the multiple? 680 or something? 690?
Yeah.
So if a stock is down $1 in the Dow, it's 690 in the averages, which if you don't keep telling yourself, it's kind of counterintuitive, but that's the way that is. Now, Europe was down yesterday. Today, kind of a mixed bag. DAX up 20, only 1%. They were the leader down yesterday. FTSE down 21.3%. CAC around down 47.6%. And maybe Lou, who's our worldly gentleman here, maybe he can talk a little bit about what's going on in France and does it make any difference. Inflation worries over there, even though Britain claims that they've licked the inflation problem. I don't know if they have. 10-year up 1 basis point, 4.33. The Bund unchanged, 2.45. Japan up 5 basis points, 107. These guys were 0.93. And it doesn't seem like much, but we're talking 20% moves. Now, are these guys going to have to raise interest rates over there because the yen was the first time in like a real, maybe like a decades, was over 106 against the dollar, which means that stocks and jacks, we better start giving them yen number too. We don't usually do that. Oil up 30 cents, 81.20. Brent up 35 cents, 85.60. Natural gas unchanged, 275. RBOB unchanged, 255. But it's up a nickel in the last week. RBOB, for those that don't know, it's the unleaded gas in New Jersey Harbor, I believe. So that essentially is the wholesale price of unleaded gasoline. Yesterday, Dow was up 15, S&P up 8, NASDAQ up 87. All that happened like right on the close, as we still seem to have a lot of mutual fund buying, so which means people are contributing their 401ks and stuff. Gold up $12, 23.25. Silver down 5 cents, 29.20. Both of these have been quiet lately. I say lately, in the last week. Copper down 2 cents, 434. We've got Bitcoin up 309, 61,157. We've got the U.S. dollar, 106.9, so it's almost back to 107 against the euro. Japan, again, 160.53, although the yen is actually a little stronger this morning. It almost got to 161 last night. British pound, 126.4, so the dollar has been stronger a little bit against the euro and the pound, but a lot against the Japanese. I got to believe, Dan, that the euro versus Japan is even worse, but... And lastly, over in Asia, maybe shouldn't have been lastly, Nikkei down 325.8%, Hang Seng down 373, under 18,000, 17,716, and Shanghai, get a load of this, down 26, 29.45, these guys are getting hammered. Japan yen weakens a 38-year low, and again, Hong Kong down 2%, so we'll have Dan talk about that second hour. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports, and Cubs? Thank God I can't make it to the end of the game.
Morning, everyone. 6:37 here in Chicago. We have 65 degrees, cooler with a breeze today, a lot of pleasant sunshine, high of 69. Phoenix, 93, it's mostly sunny and hot, 111 today is the high. Traffic here, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 17 minutes, inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 47 minutes, Eisenhower from Wolf, 29 minutes, the Dan Ryan from 95th is 20 minutes, and the Stevenson from 294 of the Ryan is 33 minutes. Dodgers beat the White Sox. That was on the south side, 4-0. Twins beat the Diamondbacks, 8-3. And the Cubs lose to the Giants in San Francisco. That was 3-4. NBA draft continues tonight. The first American off the board was actually Reed Shepard at third. The two French guys were first. And that's all I got.
How good of a show is that when you don't even know any of the guys that are getting drafted?
We'll see. We'll see how good they are.
The Bulls picked the guy that nobody knows.
The Bulls picked Buzelis, I think. Evidently, he was in the G League already, though.
Yeah, he was, but he dropped to 11, which everybody was stunned.
Yeah.
But he's only 19.
Right.
But
he's a known commodity.
Okay, so how do we end up with two Frenchmen and one? We watch these guys in NCAA, and everybody's a superstar, and all of a sudden nobody wants them.
I don't know.
I can't believe, you know, it's amazing that the French guys are better than we are.
Well, we don't know that yet.
Well, we know that Luka Doncic and the other guy are better than we are. Anyway, Lou, a lot of stuff here, bud. What do you make of the French thing? Is that much ado about nothing?
The French?
Well, they had the bad vote, and then the guy disbanded Parliament, and they're going to have a snap elections, and that was 3 weeks ago. Their stock went down 5 days in a row. Now it's come back quite a bit, and now it went down again. Yeah, I mean, is that a little brush fire?
I think, for a while, you may remember in the 60s and into the 70s, there was a lot of instability in the French government. I think you're probably looking at something comparable now. What's happening? I mean, so France has this vote for the EU Parliament, and the right wing group. And I have difficulty characterizing these people as particularly right wing because you know they're right wing by French standards. But the right wing group, Marie Le Pen's party, does really well. At which point, two other major right wing groups are dragged with her. I believe it was two dragged with her and doing well. They immediately explode. The senior guy in the one white right wing group starts going off the rails. His party fires him. He comes back and says, "No, I'm not. I am not fired. I have my office. They can come carry me out." And so. You had this, what looked like you know, a possible, intelligent, reasonably well-managed, conservative movement in France start to fall apart almost as soon as it was, you know, they had some electoral success. So there's a fair amount of turmoil. Macron, by calling the snap election, is basically telling, as I understand it, telling the French people, put up or shut up. If you want these right-wing maniacs, go ahead, elect them. See what I care. But I'm gonna challenge you. You say you're trying to send a message. Okay, here's your chance to send a message. Do it. And so we'll see what rolls out.
All right. So Lou, back up a hair and give us the reason why I'm kind of interested in this. Well, maybe because it could affect the markets and stuff. But we actually had Kathy Reardon had a guy, brought a guy in from the Finnish. He was a Finland guy. Let me back up here. In France and these other places, you elect your own parliament, but you also elect representatives to the governing body of the Euro, right?
Or the thing. Yes, EU. The European Union.
And those elections are not on the same day. It doesn't appear. So you elect those guys, and they have some power over what, like commerce and other stuff, but then
they have a huge amount of power.
But I mean, where does it end? I mean, I know they have a huge amount of power regarding not necessarily tariffs because there aren't any, but you know, they write all the regs for like lettuce and cabbage and you name it for everything like that.
They write regulations for human rights law. They set immigration. They set immigration standards. This is one of the reasons why the Brits left.
Yeah,
they dictate aspects of, especially under the human rights law, they dictate things that are inimical to the cultures of a number of these countries. That's why Hungary is balking.
Oh, is there I'll use the term constitution. I know that's the wrong term. Is there a list of powers they have that, and what if the French Parliament decides you guys overstep your bounds? They fight with them, or they leave, or what do they do? Seems weird to me. I mean, it seems kind of really odd to me.
They can be sanctioned, and they can impose economic penalties that are enforced by the other members of the EU. There are a number of penalties that they can assess. So they have enforcement capability, and it's. I mean, if you read some of the stuff that comes out of them, you think these guys are a bunch of nutters.
What did Chris used to tell us, Lou? Was it there's something like 25 pages of regulations just on lettuce or cabbage or something?
Yeah, it was lettuce. And you know, they're the ones...
To be fair, lettuce is very dangerous. No, I'm not kidding. It's all right. the concerns with...
This is your restaurant
foodborne
path.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry
to interrupt.
No, it's fine.
I have yet to see anybody charged with threatening somebody with a piece of lettuce. However,
now, in some of the restaurants that Greg's worked in, they might have.
One of the first cases I worked on as a not yet JAG was getting two women banned from MacDill Air Force Base for getting in a wrestling match over a head of lettuce in the commissary at the base.
Were they good looking?
One was hot. She was the wife of a friend, a guy I played football with. The other one was some retiree's wife, and the this is the kind of stuff you have to deal with on a base. The wife, the hot one, puts a head of lettuce in her cart, and she's, moves on past the produce section, and then she looks over, and this old woman is coming up and taking the head of lettuce out of her cart. And so she walks over to this woman and says, "What are you doing, ma'am?" And she said, that lettuce was in my cart. And this woman goes, "Oh, yes, dear, but this is the head of lettuce that I wanted."
At least she admitted it.
And Beth, names changed to protect the innocent. Beth told me I wasn't going to, she said, I'd had it. It had been a great day, and I was not going to let this BI, whatever, take the lettuce that I had just grabbed as a matter of principle. There was like 50 heads of lettuce in this thing. So she grabs it back from her, and this old woman says to fight her for it.
Unreal. We're throwing haymakers here?
They've each got their hands around this head of lettuce, and they're trying to pull it back and forth.
Oh, God.
And, of course, the head of lettuce just shreds.
So they're with the head of lettuce.
They tear it apart as they're fighting over it. And the police, the security police get called, which is why I got involved. The security police get involved. God. And they arrest both of them.
Oh, wow.
They arrested them both?
Oh, yeah. Because they couldn't figure out who had, the old woman didn't admit it to the cops that she'd taken it out of there. She just said it was a head of lettuce that she had taken, and this woman tried to pull it out of her hands.
Sort of made a great security cam video.
Oh, God.
Oh, it was classic. Anyway, Beth's story was validated by another lettuce witness, and they both ended up, this is the kind of stuff you end up with as JAG. So the base command, the Beth was, Beth was the wife of a, I don't know, what was this guy at this time? I think he was like the operations officer for this fighter unit, and well respected and well thought of. And so the base commander, banned both of them initially, and then said, "All right."
Banned them from what? The food store?
No, banned them from the base.
Really?
No.
Yeah, kicked him off the base. And then Mike's squadron commander calls and says, "Hey, this is ridiculous." And he said, "Fine. They're going to have to explain themselves." And he calls the judge advocate at the base and staff judge advocate, who was my boss at the time, and said, "I want this resolved. Take these, bring these two women in and find out what happened, and I want it resolved." So this lands, I had just arrived from my first year at law school. I was interning there. This lands on my desk. He comes in and he goes, "Lou, you were a flyer, you've got wings, you've got credibility. Sit down and sort this out between these two women."
Oh, I can't imagine this conversation.
I said, "Do you want me to do this in the courtroom, or do you want me to do it in my office? Do you want me to play Judge Wapner?"
Yeah.
And he said, "That's exactly what I want you to do.
Why don't you bring a nun in there with a paddle? That might have worked."
I want you to play Judge Wapner. Well, I mean, effectively, that's what I did. They sat down in my office, and I said, "Okay, so we got to resolve this, And I said, I got the stories from both of them, and I looked at this older woman and said, "Is this what happened?" And she said, "Well, yes, it is." I said, "Okay, let's everybody take a deep breath and sort out how we want to respond to this."
Mud wrestling cage match.
Well, if they'd both been hot, that's what would have happened. But that wasn't an option here. So I we resolved it. I got them to apologize, to each other. But the apologies were quite different. Got Beth to say, "Look, I shouldn't have grabbed the lettuce out of your hands. I should have just, we should have handled it a little differently, et cetera, et cetera." And everything was fine. But that's just, another day in the life of a JAG.
Lou Michaels, Solomon, what's the difference?
This really was, I look in retrospect, this guy was a really, the staff judge advocate for Bays was a really smart guy. I was so lucky as a JAG. My immediate bosses in the Air Force were all superb, not just lawyers, but superb officers, you know, and took this whole officership thing very seriously. And I realized years later that what that staff judge advocate was doing was saying, I want to see what this guy's got. Is he you know, a horse's patoot? Is he got some judgment? Da, da, da. So I'm going to give him this. And you know, because, and I will pass this out to any of the folks out there who are lawyers. If all you do is tell your client what the law is, you are merely a technician. What clients come to you for is a solution.
Yep.
And so your job is to solve the problem, not tell them what the law is or, you know, whatever. Your job is to solve the problem, get them to yes, and to deal with the circumstances. And it's not, in a lot of cases, it almost always involves knowing the law. But any fool, I mean, you can go on ChatGPT and find out what the law is. In most cases, what they're looking for is your judgment and your ability to match up things and craft a solution that falls within the confines of their business objectives, at least in my cases, and you know, the law. And that's why guys like Cohen and Avenatti and some of the other lawyers that you see dealing with these issues the way they deal with them are so, you know, so out of water in terms of what they, you know, what they're doing, because they're not exercising good judgment on this stuff.
Well, how do you
and this by the way is what makes people, I think, like Donald Trump such difficult clients, because they want to, a lot of times they want to do bad things, they want to do stupid things, and your job is to tell them no.
Well, how does
by the way, when they do that, and I've had this happen, a lot of times the client fires you.
Well, I mean, it's
goes to find somebody who will tell him.
Hey, you know, Lou, I've unfortunately, Dan and I were talking about it before the show. I've lost clients because I wanted no part of, you know, somebody 80 years old putting all his money in NVIDIA, which, of course, in retrospect, probably would have been the right thing to do. But and for them personally on the risk curve, I couldn't bear to watch, you know, type of thing. And you lose people from, but you know, one thing you mentioned, and whenever you start talking, most of the people on the show do the same thing to me. You turn me on to another. In today's world, I mean, you're, you know, same age as somewhat Dan and I. How much of your, I know for me, it's a massive amount. How much of your mindset, your judgment, had to do when you first started in business or law, I call law business, the people above you, you being able to talk to and learn from them, and being around them, and then them sharing what they knew, which people used to do to younger people. Of course, the younger people wanted to listen. How much of your mindset, your judgment, has come from that? I don't know what I would have done at Pullman if I was stuck to my desk with a computer or something. Nobody had one, so you were expected to walk around and talk to people who were working on the same project as you. I learned so much from these people. I mean, I was such a taker, and they were such givers easily. I mean, I don't know. Most of my judgment is from that, Lou.
Well, that's the whole issue around being in the office. That's one of the reasons why older management wants their people in the office talking to others and interacting with others. I make it a point in my practice, and have ever since day one, to sit down with the attorneys that I'm working with on a case or in some cases the paralegals that I'm working with on a case, or the administrative staff, depending on what we're doing, and do a post-mortem on almost every piece of litigation I get involved with. I'll do it with the clients too, but the first people I do it with are the people in my office, and we sit down and I say, okay, where did we screw up? And it is a free fire zone. I tell the associates, look, you may well have a different way of thinking about this case. Now is the time to tell me. I mean, if you haven't told me yet, now is the time to tell me. Where did we make a mistake? What should we have done differently? How should we have managed this differently? And in some cases where there are raging successes, people aren't really willing to say, well, we screwed up here. But that process is essential, and it's done face-to-face. It's a lot easier to have that conversation face-to-face than it is on a Zoom call.
Absolutely.
And that's, again, the essence, I think, of why most of your large companies and most of the law firms that I'm familiar with now are basically telling their people, you need to be in the office at least 3 days a week, and we would prefer you to be in the office every day.
Yeah, and as you're saying, Lou, the learning process of just talking to others and seeing them face to face is so much more so much more effective in person. We actually visit with the companies we invest in, and it's managers like guys in our age group that are wanting people to come back and appreciate the effectiveness of that. That I think a lot of younger managers miss out on. You know, there's an effectiveness that comes from that. There's productivity that comes from that. And there's also you improve your communication skills face to face.
It's really interesting. My oldest son is a senior associate with a good sized firm there in Chicago, and he rarely goes into the office. And I said, and the firm doesn't care? He said, the guy I work with, my principal advising partners in New York, my clients are literally in 15 time zones, across Europe and Asia. I talked, I'm not going to see them. I'm in the office looking at a computer screen, or I'm at home looking at a computer screen. It really doesn't matter. I said, can you make the kind of small talk or the kind of personal chats on these interactions that you would do in a face-to-face meeting? And he said, sometimes. But he says, your point's taken. But he said, I wouldn't be seeing these people face to face anyway. That if I wasn't seeing them on a screen, I wouldn't see them at all, because I'd be in a phone call with them.
Well, if you go in and there's nobody there, it doesn't help out.
Well, that's it. And I mean, and I said, what about the partner that assigns you work? Because you've got a local supervision. He goes, oh yeah, I mean, I see that guy maybe once a month. He works remotely too. And my response to that was, well, that's 90% of your problem right there, at least in my take.
One of my buddies
you're exactly right.
Totally agree.
We're older. We know what those kinds of connections do.
One of my buddies who Dan has met is in risk control for one of these big firms, and I heard some lady, I think she was above him. He never saw her during the whole COVID. All of a sudden, one day, they had this big risk problem, and she blew it. They couldn't find her or something. Hey, Lou, obviously, this is a good discussion, but what is going on we've got 3 minutes here. What is going on in terms of the situation in Japan we talked yesterday, we were kind of joking about it, that they don't even know how to have sex over there anymore, it appears. I guess it's kind of funny, but basically
we're headed in the same direction, Tom.
Well, but they don't allow the immigration to fill the void. But I'm saying they have now their currency's going in the crapper. They seem to have this ongoing thing with the zombie banks throwing it all together. I mean, they're still fighting the battle of 35 years ago because they never flushed it out. They seem to want to manage their currency to the point where their interest rate is 1% when everybody else is 4 or 5, which is a zero-sum game going on. And yet they now have clearly some issues with China. They have had a while, but now they have to start building up some of their defense, you would think. They have way more. If you think we have debt here, they got like twice as much. The two allies, Japan and the U.S., are kind of in the crapper here in terms of finances and so forth. I mean, what does that mean going forward for China? Obviously, their market goes down every day. They're having the same kind of problems we are, maybe worse. I mean, is this a race to the bottom? Is it going to cause somebody to do something stupid?
Well, yeah. I remember we were talking about how dangerous a period of time it was for strategic military thinking, that there's a window of opportunity. The the estimates are now we'll be in a shooting war with China, or our allies will be, probably within the next 2.5 years. Wow. Because that window of opportunity for them is closing. The Japanese are looking at a long-term, you know, slide into a gerontocracy. I mean, we've got a gerontocracy in the sense that we've got a mental defective because of his age who's in the White House right now, and somebody who's not too far behind him in terms of age, but seems to be weathering a little bit. But we got two very old men. We've got very old people in Congress staggering around. But we've got a younger population. The Japanese have a very old population. I mean, it's so old that they are bringing 60-plus-year-old guys back to fight in their armed forces. And so they're going to have to confront this impact. Their productivity is going to go down because old people are not as productive. I mean, you know, we're not completely out of it, but we're not. You know, the short answer is we're not. And so they're going to have to figure out a way to do this, whether it's with automation or AI or whatever. And I'm nervous because they are the bulwark there against China. They have a lot. They have a perfectly good fear of China and its potential, and you know, they're right next door, and they have a sufficient military capability that China has to think about them. But you know, it's Japan and us in that area.
Well, what's going on with the Philippines and China? The Philippines are trying to put up some kind of a fight somewhere.
Well, they finally understand that China's trying to, you know, is effectively going to take them over if it has the opportunity. But they don't have a culture that's going to support the kind of conflict or deterrence that we need. They're going to allow us to put bases down, but that's not going to be enough. Australia is the other major power that's being threatened there, a Western power that's being threatened there, and they, you know, they have a strong pacifist element in their government. They're trying to ramp up, but you know, they also want to be seen as, you know, sort of independent. So yeah, lots of uncertainty there.
Well, we have that here in a certain extent. I mean, there are people. I mean, I you know, try and keep up, but do a history of, you know, the military-industrial complex, and clearly they've always been sort of favored here, and there's you can see corruption back in there for like a long time. But we have a lot of people here, some on the show, that are absolutely convinced that because of that, we should become, you know, like Sweden or something. And yet, I don't know. There's some bad people in the world, and I don't know. Their mentality is, like you keep telling me, their mentality is not mine. You can't just assume
right.
everything's going to be okay.
And I mean, this is the fomenting of that mindset is a significant factor in the efforts by Russia, China, and a number of other places to try to influence our elections, and to basically make it. Well, let me put it this way: let's say we put boots on the ground in southern Lebanon. And Dan, I'm cutting into your time. I'm sorry. But let's say we put boots on the ground in southern Lebanon to fight Hezbollah. How quickly do you think we would see tens of thousands of Hamas terrorist sympathizers mobilized in New York, Washington, D.C., mobilized around our bases? Engaging in civil disobedience or actually just outright sabotage, how fast do you think that would happen? I think it would happen pretty quickly.
Well, yeah. I mean, this whole episode in Gaza, and I.
But that's yeah. part of what's going on, is these entities mobilizing people within our border already here, who will interfere with our ability to conduct foreign policy.
I don't disagree. I just someday, Lou, somebody's going to write a history of this, of the entire Middle East fiasco. Actually, one of my buddies, a contributor to the show, John Lee, gave me a few books which I haven't really gone through them yet. I need to be more like Lou and actually dive through them. And one has to do with America's history in the Middle East. Lou, we've been there since the first drop of oil landed. I mean, we're all over the place. I mean, we're part of the solution. We're part of the problem. We're part of something. I don't know what. And the other people are just as bad. I mean, it's just that whole area. I don't know. This whole Lebanon used to be like a regular country, didn't it? Sort of.
Oh yeah, it was the jewel. It was the Paris. Beirut was the Paris of the Middle East. And a gorgeous place.
Were you over there when it was nice?
No, I flew around that area a lot, but I never landed there. Go look at pictures of Kabul in the 1960s, or Tehran in the mid 1970s. You see what's happening is a clash between a fundamental theocratic culture and a Western liberal democracy, and that's what's happening.
It's
and
been
there's
happening
a substantial
for a while.
Number of people who vote for the medieval theocratic entity, and they want that.
Yeah, well, we don't.
They're all men.
Yeah, they're all men, and women are
well,
happy.
No, that's not true. There's a huge number of women that support this.
I don't get it.
If you look, who was tearing down the pictures of those hostages, the Israeli hostages? It wasn't men for the most part. It was women.
Jesus. All right, Lou, we got a dash, buddy. Good stuff. SP Futures down 9, NASDAQ Futures down 38. We'll take a real short break, and then we'll talk markets with Mr. Dan. Lou, you got any plan for the weekend, or what's out there? You guys did it snow out there or something?
Snow up in the mountains, but no, we're not. We're gonna be homebodies this weekend.
Are you guys filling up Lake Mead, or is there not that much water?
There's plenty of water in the rivers right now.
All right. Maybe you'll help the rest of the world. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again. Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Business every day, taking care of business.
Blowing up against Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Greg Pappas on the board. We got Dan Janitas in the office, in the studio, in the office, in the place. We're just talking on break, which of course you're never supposed to do, about Dan's dad being went to law school when the Air Force put him through law school. It's like Lou, and he was. I really don't know any of the rules of the Korean War. I can tell you that from Audrey's dad and from Freedom from Fear. I read it. Had to do with the constant, I'll say, internal war between the armed forces and the manufacturing people in World War II, all fighting for men.
Yep, absolutely.
And then I know, obviously, from personal experience, the Vietnam stuff and who went and who didn't and all those kinds of things. I honestly don't have a shred of clue about Korea. I know there was a draft of some kind because they drafted Major League Baseball players like Ted Williams back to fly. And John Glenn, Ted Williams was John Glenn's wingman.
Huh. Makes sense, though. Yeah, same part of the country.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they put the World War II guys back in, and how effective they were because now they were jets and they weren't before. I have no idea, but Ted Williams allegedly, because of that incredible eyesight, still holds the record. Well, nobody's gonna break it, of the propeller driven planes shooting at the targets in Florida when they were in training. He still holds the record for how many times he hit the target.
It doesn't surprise me.
No, I mean, when you had 2010 vision or wherever he had, it's pretty special.
Right.
Well, mentioned Chuck Yeager. They said one of the reasons why he was so successful is he saw the planes coming. Other guys going, where are they?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a
gift.
It's a gift. I've heard some rumors to the effect that some Major League Baseball players are doing the... even if they have 20/20 vision, they're trying to get the vision improvement where you get it down to like 20/16.
Interesting, yeah.
Of course,
it makes a lot of sense.
Except the first time what do they do? You're reading glasses when they're 30.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's the
flip side.
The flip side of it. Yep.
So Dan, we talk about some of the world problems with flu, and this is what I love so much about the show is you talk about these kind of grand problems, and then you try and focus them in. Then you zero in on the buy the dip, and then you see these earnings plays. Even the Micron last night, even though it's come back here, it's only down 8. I'm going to say the straddle was 12 or something. At one point, it was double the straddle. I know we had Federal Express double the straddle. We had Oracle double the straddle. I mean, this is when I say double the straddle. I mean, as you know, I'm kind of one of these guys that's, I don't know how they know, but the market kind of always knows. You know, if the straddle's 12 bucks, the thing somehow moves 10 to 14, yet now they're not. The market seems clueless. I don't know if it's the fabric of the after-hours market where there's nobody in the way and everybody just gets out of the way and it's causes these big moves. But somehow or another, this is starting to almost look like a top where every stock now, except for Micron, seems to be, no matter if earnings are good or bad, I mean, we're talking about Apple has added 15 billion shares outstanding, and the stock is up, 20-some dollars in 3 weeks. I mean, we're talking, $300-400 billion in market cap, and their revenue was, like, down on the year.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's like...
people are not paying attention to earnings, you know, and certainly not responding to earnings the way they have, or if they're responding, they're responding in a very short time period, and then it's really the quant models and the algos that are watching those levels, you know. So some of it's happening outside of fundamental, you know, outside of our thought process. Hopefully it's not taken over by AI, right? Hopefully these trading decisions aren't taken over because I think then we would that sense of human judgment in terms of understanding that. Still, it seems like it's fading, right? Going back to your comment, though, about talking about FedEx and you know, NVIDIA, and just from observation over what's happened in the last week, in the last couple of weeks, I mean, at one point, NVIDIA stock was down 12%, and people are asking...
12% from a 1 or 2 day spike high.
Right, but that is what it is. It's this very, very short-term volatility that... And I always get the question, like, you know, should I buy or when should I step in and all of that, and I say buy the Qs. So QQQ is the ETF that covers a lot of the NASDAQ names. And you can have movement, as we did over the past week, where Amazon is up and Apple is up, but NVIDIA is down. the way that you hedge or the way that you protect yourself from single stock, we call it single stock risk or stock specific risk, is to buy something, buy the QQQs where you're having broad exposure to the tech industry, so that if one is down significantly in a short period of time and you just happen to time the top of the market, you're not going to lose out. You're certainly not going to lose out as much. So for somebody, and I do think it still makes sense to have some exposure there, although if you have a lot, I still think it's the time to start trimming and taking back. One of the smart moves to make if you are in tech is to, you know, to sort of sell your profits, if you will, over a period of time. If you're in an IRA, if you're doing a retirement account, you're not going to have the tax implications. I would highly advise against day trading in tech. It's just, you know, it's trying to time the movements is very difficult. And to your point, Chief, the, you know, the whole concept of watching earnings, you know, whether it be ahead of time or in, you know, at the time when earnings are announced, market's not following that right now. So not to the extent that they could or should. So, you know, again, long-term investing, you know, QQQ over single stock, and keep that exposure down. Just continue to sell into the rallies, if you will. I'm not saying sell out. Just keep that, keep your position down. Don't let that part of your portfolio grow. So we call it rebalancing, where it gets to a certain level and then you take some profits or you sell. Otherwise, you're going to end up with 80% of your retirement money in video or in tech, and that's not what you want to be doing right now.
Dan, as a guy who's in somewhat, well, I would say almost the same business I'm in, money management, and your strong expertise is in the fixed income stuff, which for the last 8 years, you got to wonder why you got in that business, right? Somehow or another, I get myself boxed into this. Everybody is should be always protected and dragging puts and selling calls. Well, that's clearly not what I believe. It's just a function of a lot of the clients that I have that it happened to be maybe retired and so sort. I mean, we have a lot of people at PTI that are just long. You know, there's people are 35, 40, and just invest in the market every month. I mean, we have, you know, there's no, I mean, they don't, depending on the size of the account and the and how much the person is, I'll use the term counting on it, vis-a-vis their current income. We have all kinds of people, all kinds of strategies. But the thing that, you know, started us out in the money management thing was the protected index program. And now, of course, the last 3 years, why the hell did anybody want to be protected, right? But look back. I could say I made it to work today without cracking up. Why do I have my car insurance? You know,
right,
except
yeah.
I'm not going to leave the house without it. You know,
yeah.
it's a mindset. But the somewhere, it's very difficult to have the conversation to somebody. Well, you were lucky enough to buy. You put $10,000 in NVIDIA 5 years ago. Now it's like worth $300. Maybe you should lighten up. What do you mean? It's my winner. You know, it's just. Really very tough. And I'm looking here at one, it's not the NVIDIA, but I got this thing up here. God help you when you go to the chart. I've got Apple, other than during 2020, you know, right in the middle of COVID when the stock went flying down. I've got Apple at like a massive PE. It's 33 for a mature company that I'm going to say can't really double, because if they do, the whole world has to double. That is, I'm going to say the average has got to be 15, so it's like double that, and the stock hasn't grown really in 3-4 years. I mean, there's always going to be something they're going to do different, or
right.
But the fact is they haven't. Now, Jim Cramer, who you know, he is a very intelligent man in a lot of ways, but he plays to his audience a little bit, which is, you know, if I was on CNBC making that kind of money, maybe I would too. I don't know, but the point is, he made this point a couple weeks ago. I'll use the term. High PE and revenue per share numbers of NVIDIA going to translate itself through all the other stocks. And I'm sitting there going, you know what? The dude is right. It is.
It is. Yeah.
Now we've even got, I mean, I was looking at, you know, what's the one with the, who do you guys, Intuit. Intuit
yes.
does tax stuff.
Right.
They're like 12, 13 revenue and God knows what PE. I mean, is there a limit to this? Or is the world telling you that if we have a problem, the Fed's going to pour money into the system, and even though the stocks are going to double, they really aren't going to double because the value of the dollar is going to go down by 50% like we did in the last 10 years. I mean, that could be the we could be wrong, Dan, for that reason.
Well, I have a couple answers to those points, and I think the first to talking about portfolio allocation. So now if you're a listener who is close to retirement, at retirement, you got to think of long term. You got to think of long term also going backwards. So you think that you've made money in your house, you've made money in your retirement plan, you've worked hard and you've gotten to that point where your assets have grown. Don't be greedy at this point. So I would say if you're at that point of retirement, and I get this question all the time from people, in your portfolio, depending on whether you want to pass that, you have a legacy and say want to pass the money on to your children, but if you want to live on it the way my parents have, and I think they're good role models in this regard, I'd say 20% in stocks. I'd say 30% in the protected strategies, because you want to capture those gains that you don't want to lose that money. I'd say if it's a taxable account, you want to put 25% in munis, because I do think there's more room to go. It's one of the few places that you actually can get a tax break, and if you're at a higher income level, you still are allowed that tax break. And then also 25% in T-bills, you're getting 5.5% short-term notes.
Don't forget, Dan, you get the tax break in Illinois on the federal stuff.
On the federal stuff, but if you buy municipals, you get it also on
right. Oh, I get it.
State.
But I'm saying even your
yeah,
what's the state
federal,
of Illinois? The state's 5%. Is it 5 or 4.5, whatever it is. You get that off at least.
Right. So that would be the ideal allocation. If you're at retirement, if you've run a business, or if you've just decided to retire, you want to have that money to live off of, and you want to be able to sleep at night, and you want to think long term. Now, if you want to take a portion of that, and I would not recommend taking more than 10%, maybe not even more than 5% of that, and then have it as your play money where you're following, and if you enjoy that, go ahead and do it. That would not be something that I would enjoy doing, because I'm much more long-term focused in my investment perspective. But I think an allocation like that, where you do have some exposure to the equity market, but you really want to protect what you've earned, what you've worked hard for. And going to the question about, you know, everything being up and multiples being much higher than they were, and the contagion. Think about real estate, right? And I think real estate is a good analogy. So real estate prices have gone through the roof. And in some parts of the country, like Boston, where I just came from, there's still bidding wars. I mean, it's still nuts how, you know, the multiples, if you will, in the real estate market there are just insane. But we've had some cracks in the system. For example, there's some cracks in Florida. So it'll be the same thing with stocks. There will be, you know, we have this inflation, if you will, in valuations, but there's, you know, we're going to start seeing some cracks. And where we're going to see those is going to be related to our high debt level, our national debt level, just keeping it, you know, just exploding. And also to your other point, Chief, about the money supply. So think about the sources of money supply that have come into the market. So we had the big cut in corporate taxes, and that brought a lot of money into the system. That actually increased valuations. Every company I talked to benefited from those.
When you talk about money supply, you talk more about some wealth in some areas. I strictly talk wealth. M2.
You're talking about the
M2.
M2, right. But I guess what I'm saying is, if you think of all the sources that have added money to our system. So we've had the huge run up in valuations. We've had money coming in from corporate tax. We've had money that came in during COVID. We had money that's come in from the government that just seems to be like an endless spigot. Well, what has happened is some of that is changing, and it's changing slowly, and it's not necessarily being reflected in the statistics that we're seeing. So a lot of it involves doing a little bit of homework. And what we're realizing is that this is starting to have an impact, that there is a pullback. And depending on what we see going forward, I don't believe we're going to have this endless amount of money coming into the system. I do think that's come down. And that is, if I want to use the word passe, that's happened already.
Let me ask you, I love the fight back, because I want to drag. When I say fight back, I'm agreeing with you, yet I want to drag a little more knowledge out of where I know is in that brain. Well, how do you just, when you say that, you just said that it looks like that ship has sort of sailed, the COVID pour money into the thing, and yet how do you explain, and I honestly think this is what is driving the market in some way, Dan, how do you explain what's the stupid little bank that almost went under in San Francisco?
Oh, the SVC?
What's the name of the place? Silicon Valley
Bank. Silicon Valley Bank, yeah.
The Fed...
SVB. Yeah.
Yeah, but the Fed spent 18 months dragging a little bit of money out of the system, and in 1 week put half of that back. To save that bank. So why would... If you're going to talk about somebody who just wants to put his money in the market and figure the Fed has his back or his backside or something... why would you not think that if the market started going down, they wouldn't pour money in and keep it going?
And it happened in 2008, but we still had a sell-off, right? I mean, to a certain degree, it
except
happened.
Except they overreached. They couldn't put enough in to save that.
Right.
I mean, there was such a degradation of money supply there that it was almost like 1932, where it dropped by 25% in 2 years. They couldn't save that. But they can certainly throw, you know, a few billion in next week if the market goes down to push it back up. And I surely think they'll do that before the election if it happens.
Right. I think that's this year, and that's a good point, too. I think that's what we're seeing this year. We're seeing a lot of window dressing, right? We're seeing a lot of media presentation that's very positive. And, you know, if you are a believer in, which I'm not necessarily, but if you're a believer in the administration that supports the big media, then that makes a lot of sense, right? That you're seeing a lot of, you know, news about the positive things going on in the economy much more than you are seeing a balance, or you're seeing like reports that come out that explain the concerns that we have today. You know, one of the concerns that was actually addressed with Lou as well is the, you know, the younger population coming in to replace in some cases or to you know, the fresh blood coming in to take over these positions and to continue to grow the economy. Well, I see that being a big issue. The sort of the, you know, the lack of training, the lack of, you know, the difficulty to attract talent in this environment. Who would have known we'd have that problem even a few years ago when companies couldn't hire? Now companies, even in the tech industry, or especially in the tech industry, are laying people off. Finding it hard, like talented 30-something-year-olds are getting laid off. So that's what's going on behind the scenes that you don't hear. You don't hear the media talking about, you know, maybe in our field we do to a certain degree in the investment world and the financial world. We know some of that. We hear some of that. But overall, you're not seeing the national news talking about layoffs at Amazon or layoffs at Microsoft. And that's happening, and finding new talent to replace them has been a challenge. So there are some things that are brewing that I think are going to be concerns, or that I think are going to continue to have. We're going to continue to see our economy slow. Tying in also what we were talking about in Europe, they've already seen that. They haven't grown quite as crazy as we have. So Europe is in some ways a little ahead of us. In some ways they didn't experience this huge momentum in their equity markets, so they're a little more protected than we are, but there's kind of two sides.
Yeah, what do you suppose the euro balance sheet looks like with all the bonds they bought at like 150? They're trading 80.
You're right. So their financial situation is not looking good at all. And then when you get down into particular countries, there some of them are in much deeper trouble than we are. So we are, you know, we do have this amazing debt load. We also have the household debt load increasing, you know.
Yeah, what would you do if you're in Japan when it's like twice ours?
Yeah, that I can't even imagine.
When you talk about Boston, and really, I mean, I love the fact that you get what I'm trying to do here, and that all this stuff kind of ties together.
It does.
We can talk one day about how, and then, as a matter of fact, I'm looking at it right now. I will kick it up here. The U.S. debt clock. The biggest part of the federal budget is in Medicare and Medicaid by far. I mean, it's a double defense, it's double interest on debt. Well, it's not double Social Security, but Social Security is paid for sort of directly. Most of it, 90% of it, is pretty much paid for directly by Social Security contributions. But you have a system where somehow or another, through grease and politicians, through the patent law, through something and something, we've got people, and because people are insured, maybe they don't directly pay for it, you've got people being able to charge for new drugs for sure, and for like a really long time, 17 years, you know, maybe 100 times what it costs to make them. You know, that type of thing. I mean, the amount of money in that industry is incredibly dramatic. I mean, the money that's in a hospital to where the doctor is now, you know, he's almost like the part that comes over the fence last in terms of getting paid. It's all these bureaucrats. So it doesn't, in a place like Boston, which is very biotech heavy, I mean, when we had this discussion yesterday, I forget with who, can't remember with Kenny, regarding the reason why people can pay. He was talking about how much a condominium costs in New York. So, Kenny, if a condominium or an apartment costs $6,000 a month for a one bedroom, and I'm making $400,000 for Goldman Sachs, I pay it.
Right.
If I'm not, guess what? I can't. I mean, so Boston. I mean, it doesn't surprise me. I'll use the term, and this is not a shot at any individual. The people in the biotech industry are seriously overpaid on the management level.
And what's happened, Chief, is that they've retired now, right?
Right.
They're retiring with huge amounts of money,
right.
And that continues to fuel the system, right? That's what's happening. But what is also happening at the same time is not having people to replace them, or having a 40-something person who's under stress, you know, because it's just there wasn't this long-term plan for succession in that industry. So having some clients in the industry, a lot of friends in the industry, they're people who've benefited tremendously. But the people in our age group who are in the retirement, they're the ones who have done extremely well. I'm more concerned about the younger people who are in the industry that have a lot of challenges and are faced with a lack of management, a lack of direction. There is not the excitement there about the industry as a whole, but there's the money. And one other point that you made, which I think is really good and worth mentioning, because you tend to see it more on the coast than you do in the rest of the country, is salaries have kept up with the cost of living. They have in New York, they have in Boston.
Well, from the people that are still there.
From the people who are there, exactly. But the interesting thing is I spent some time with family in Maine, and my cousin runs the media company in Maine, and she made a comment that really stuck out to me, and she said, you know, Portland, Maine has been a place everyone's moving. A lot of people want to get away from the cities. It's a nice town. It's, you know, it's on the water. Has a lot of great restaurants. It has a lot to offer. But the salaries haven't kept up there. So they are having trouble attracting talent there. So that is a concern, I think, in some of these smaller cities. So we've had the demographics change throughout the country, where a lot of people who have lived in the city have moved out to smaller cities or areas that are kind of their semi-retirement, or along a lot of people who are able to work remotely. Now they've lost those remote, you know, that remote benefit, if you will. They're trying to find jobs in these smaller towns or these smaller cities. These smaller cities might be, like for younger people, they might be better places. They were more affordable. Better place to raise a family. They might be, you know, better quality of life.
Well, we got a dash to break here. Damn it, Audrey was not sending. She was selling houses for people who were moving to Indiana.
Same
5 to 10 years ago. Now all of a sudden, the prices in Indiana have almost evened up here.
Same thing. Exact same thing.
Let's dash to break, because I want you to hold that thought. You see, you know, here's the problem with you being in the same office. You must be reading my mind. I was just going to ask you a question you almost damn near just answered. But still, it's how do you, and I'm not surprised, I'm glad you brought up the media piece, because I'm going to talk something about the SP futures now only down 3, and the NASDAQ futures down 25. What's the plan, Dan? Buy the dip. That's what we're doing. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. a longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you nuts?
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Dan Janitas in the studio, and we have Greg Pappas running this whole show today and doing a hell of a good job with three of us on. S&P futures up 5, down 5, NASDAQ futures down 30. We were down a hell of a lot more, but Micron's come back a little bit. And by the way, we just buy the dip. That's what we do. Dow down 87. I don't have any stocks in the Dow. I've got Amazon up 96 cents. By the way, Amazon just blew through the $2 trillion number yesterday. $3 billion, $4 trillion, what's the difference, Dan? It's just play money. I just wish they'd drop a little on the people I care about, you know, a little play money here and there. Over in Europe, we were down some, but now we're DAX up 35, FTSE down 15.2%. CAC around is the only one that's making a significant move, down 48.6%. H&M, what's H&M, Dan? It's down 13%. What is it? I don't even know what that is.
Clothing manufacturer.
Clothing,
yeah. Oh, okay.
Clothing. Well, see, I wouldn't know that. Is this high-end clothing? The stuff like in
Speed fashion.
Oh, God. Right. Well, let's see. You know this
mall,
stuff.
Like mall stores
Okay.
What I'm thinking of.
A 10-year unchanged 4.31. The Bund unchanged 2.46. Japan, they're up again, though, 1.07 as the yen keeps getting pummeled. And what's going to happen? Are those guys going to have to raise rates over there? I'm thinking they're going to have to, Dan. We'll see. They seem to resist it, like, for decades. Oil up 48 cents, 81.38. Still kind of in the range, a high end of the range. Brent up 62 cents, 85.87. Natural gas down a penny, 272. RBOB unchanged, 255. We've got yesterday somewhat of an inside day, but then we ran up right on the close, which, Dan, you and I would attribute to mutual fund buying. Dow up 15, S&P up 8, NASDAQ up 87. As a matter of fact, we raced up like 50 points in the NASDAQ futures when Micron came out. It dropped like 100 points in a second, but now it's kind of back up again. Gold up 15.30 now, 23.28. Silver up 6 cents, 29.32, so we'll get some rallies there. Copper down a penny, 4.35. Bitcoin up 3.06. It had been getting kind of clobbered, but now it's back up to 61,154. We've got the currency, and again, we have to include Japan now. The euro unchanged at 107. British pound kind of unchanged at 126.6. So the dollar's been a little stronger there, but really has been strong versus the yen. The yen's now 160.42, so the yen actually a little bit stronger this morning, but still over 160 is like how many year phenomenon, Dan. It's quite a bit. And the last but not least, over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 325.8%, Hang Seng down 373. That's a full 2%, 17,716. Shanghai down 26. That's another almost 1%, 29.45. Those stocks have been getting hammered. Japan yen is at a 38-year low. You know, this is not good over there. What do you got for us, Trevor, Weather Sports?
Morning, everyone. 7:38 here in Chicago. 65 degrees with a breeze. Pleasant sunshine. High of 69 today. Phoenix is 93 now. Mostly sunny, and it is hot with a high of 111. Traffic inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 39 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 58 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 39 minutes. Ryan from 95th is 24 minutes, and the Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 33 minutes. MLB, Dodgers beat the White Sox. That was 4-0. Twins beat the Diamondbacks 8-3, and the Cubs lose to the Giants in San Francisco 3-4. That's all I got, Chief.
Dan, a question for you. Why didn't you were in last night, right?
Yeah.
Why didn't we slither on over to my one game of the year at Sox Park, I guarantee you we could have found a seat and just to see Ohtani play. I've never seen him play.
Yeah. Next time. I'll be here in August, so they'll still be playing, so we'll definitely...
I don't think they'll be here. I don't care about the Sox.
Oh, right. Yeah, they're not your team. That's right.
Well, I've been to a million Sox games. I guess they're sort of my team, but Ohtani's the guy. I don't want to say I never saw the guy play. You know?
Yeah.
I never saw Ichiro play. I've never seen Mike Trout play either. I mean, in person.
Yeah, on TV, yeah. The idea of going to a Sox game would be fun, though. Interesting being in Boston when the Celtics, the parade was Friday, and that whole city is lit up. And then also, shout out to Florida for the Panthers, too. I think it's although you'll always be a Boston fan if you grew up there, it's hard to adjust to, say, a Florida team, for example, but certainly a good season for them.
I got a really stupid question. Where Florida Panthers, where are they? What city?
They're in South Florida. There's a stadium, and I've been to a few of the games there that I want to say it's near Hollywood, Florida. It's a
Miami. It's north.
Yeah,
north of Miami.
Right. It's south. It's South Florida.
All right, so but north of Miami.
Oh yeah, it's definitely north of Miami. Actually, now that I'm thinking of it, because
Amarant Bank Arena, Sunrise.
Sunrise, right. Yeah. So it's west of Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, so it's
in Broward.
It's Broward. Yeah, it's north of Hollywood. Hollywood, I confused because that's where the original Marlins stadium was, and they actually the Panthers used to play at a different stadium in Miami, but now it's all in Sunrise. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Where was the original Orange Bowl? Was over by University of Miami. Wasn't it?
Yes. Yep.
But that was kind of a hellhole.
The new stadium, though, is I've been to a few games there. It's where the Panthers play. It's beautiful. Yeah, it's great facility.
And the other guys, what's the other Florida team? They're in Orlando or in Tampa?
Tampa,
the Lightning.
The Lightning. Yeah, my nephew actually played for the junior team for the Tampa Lightning. I think I've made this comment before. That you do not have the fan base that you say have here in Chicago or Boston when you go to a game there, whatever sport it is. You don't have as much loyalty. So even going to a Red Sox Tampa Rays game in the fall, half the stands. Well, 20% of the stadium was full, and half the stands were more than half. I'd say were Red Sox fans.
In the immortal words of
transplants.
Those Bucks fans went through it for a while, though.
Yeah. That's true, too.
Terrible.
Yeah.
What did Chip Carey say, that Florida should have one baseball team and it ought to be in Orlando? And that, too? I mean, how much did the guy spend on the stadium in Miami? Still nobody goes there either.
Right. It's hard to get to. That's part of the problem. Really, that's...
Well, I'm going to say
You don't have the fan base.
Well, the first new Orange Bowl, the one that they... I mean, they're two stadiums away from the Orange Bowl. The one... Was it Joe Robbie was right on
the
interstate?
Yes, Robbie is. Yes,
that's right on the interstate.
Yep,
right?
That's what I'm referring to. That was.
But now that's gone, and there's another one, right?
There's a new one, yeah, and I haven't been there.
It's crazy stuff. But Dan, what I wanted to talk about, we keep talking about these pockets, and I keep whenever we do this, I hearken back to this book that somehow I picked off the shelf, and now I quote all the time, "Freedom from Fear," William Kennedy, and I, my view of the, I wasn't here during the 29 crash or the 20s. Here's some anecdotal stuff from my old uncles when I was young, but you got the feeling that everybody was kind of caught up in this market craze. And the fact is, that wasn't true. I mean, only 7%, there were no 401ks, only 7% of the people in the country had any stock at all. So, you look at the great, the expensive cars and the stuff going on in New York and all those kinds of things in the the shoe shine guy saying that he was in the market. That was all East Coast, maybe Chicago centric. Yes. I mean, William Kennedy said that something like, 50% of the country more was agrarian, right? And he said they were in a 10-year recession / depression. And the 20s was a horseshit time for just about everybody, right, if you weren't in the finance world. So the idea that this stuff is balanced, I mean, it never really is. I mean, we just were talking about the biotech industry and how they seem to make an extreme amount of money because of maneuvering in the tariff laws and other stuff, and maybe paying people off in Congress and so forth. So it doesn't surprise me that in Boston, the salaries are X, and the housing prices are X. But you just described that very eloquently. Yet if you look at the averages here, and the debt clock here, they've got the median income now of say 39.5. I think these guys are light with that. But let's say it's 44. Okay, the median income in 2000 was 32. So let's give it up. It's not 50%. Let's say it's 40%. Right. Let's give it 40%. Let's be nice. Median new home in 2000 was 165, and now it's 410. So somehow these averages, the reason why somebody's paying that in Boston is because, hey, if I'm making $500,000 a year, how much you want for an apartment? $5,000? Oh, it's yours, buddy. And what's the difference? But if I'm making 44 a year, and you want... Wait a minute, my entire salary is going in the first 9 months rent. I can't do that necessarily. Are we ever going to match this up? Should we match this up? Is it a problem?
It's been a problem, and it's been something that I've been discussing since prior to the pandemic. Just, we were talking about wage inflation, not like wages just hadn't kept up. And more recently they have, because it's been a way, it hasn't been a choice for companies. They've had to pay up. The other point that Lou brought up too, which I've seen, is the experienced person. We've talked about this in the past, in their 60s and even 70s, being given promotions and raises. And I'm thinking, engineering in certain fields where it's you don't have the succession plan, you don't have the younger people coming in. So there's an imbalance, if you will, that has occurred, and it is starting to be a problem with younger people. The affordability is much worse than it was when, in terms of being able to buy a house, say in the Boston area when I was coming out of grad school. It's, my parents, I look in hindsight, they were very good investors in the home they bought, but if you look at
timing was everything,
but you look at his income versus what he paid for the house, and it was basically the same. And it's very difficult to do that in Boston. As a starting salary, you can't, somebody coming in out of any profession, a lawyer, a doctor, an investment person, it's going to be hard to find, the first year's income. It's going to be, the house will probably be four or five times what you're earning in your first year. So it's going to take longer.
If you're
going to downsize,
good.
Or you're going to...
Are you four or five times the combined income of the family, or just... the guy or the girl is the lead breadwinner?
Probably the lead. Well, I'd say combined income is really what's had to happen, right?
Yeah, well, that's a big change.
That is a big change.
Because now you're paying for two cars, two train tickets.
Yep.
You're paying for somebody to watch the kids.
Right.
It's a huge...
It's much more... it's more of a struggle now than it was in our generation, and certainly, at least from an affordability point of view, that's an issue, and that will continue to be an issue. So what happens there, you've got to keep paying the higher salaries to get the talent. And the talent, if you want the talent to come into the office, you got to keep paying more, or you've got to offer some other benefit. Some companies are offering benefits of people being able to not only work remotely, but maybe live outside of the country. So you have younger people, that who aren't married, that have the opportunity to maybe spend a few years overseas. And, Oracle is doing that, and some other companies are providing that as a benefit, but not raising their salaries. Just saying, hey, you want to live in Spain for a year, you want to live overseas, you can work remotely. And I think also to Lou's point about his son, in the whole concept of working globally, it makes sense. So if you're in a position that's global, you can do that.
I don't want to say anything nasty about the legal profession when Lou's on. It's got to be one of the few groups that have managed to keep up with the guy who charged $300 an hour 15 years ago is now charging six.
Yeah, absolutely.
Name me another industry where that could happen.
Not ours. not in our industry.
Right?
We certainly can't do that.
But
with a straight face too. Right? They can charge you $600 an hour for.
You're a math dude like me, and when you mentioned, I'm going to say you lobbed one out there that is quote the party line, that all of a sudden now wages are catching up. I'm going to say, if you believe the 20% inflation since 2020, which I don't, and I don't think you do either.
No.
If you believe that, you might say most people are up 20%, okay? And I think maybe a lot of people are. Okay, so I'm with you there, but my concern is, well, one of my million concerns, is if you and I worked in, say, a restaurant, boy, I'd be a, I love to cook, but I could never chop everything the same time, the same way every time, like these other guys do. If we were working there in 2000, now Greg, throw something at me if I'm wrong here, they might be paying the helpers in the kitchen $9 an hour. All right, so we've
the,
got...
The costs are just passed on. It's not like they're...
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that we went through an era where we were sending people overseas where working people did not keep up for two decades. All right, so, I mean, I think that I can say that pretty much equivocally. And so all of a sudden, the guy's now making... Guy or lady's now making $10 or $10.50, and all of a sudden now he gets a 20% raise and he's making $12.50. Well, the world has passed him by.
Yeah.
So that's not even a burger at lunch now.
Right.
I mean, the world has passed $12.50 an hour. What is that? 2.5 gallons of gas for an hour's work? I mean, we're not even on the same planet. I mean, for that person to be made whole from back to 2000, the $10 an hour guy's got to be making 20. And he's not. You know what I'm saying? I don't think he is.
No.
I think we, in the last year or two, some people might have caught up. I mean, Audrey and I go to this Thai restaurant. It's owned by a family. And the guy, she runs it. The guy helps out. He's a construction guy. It's not like he's a do-nothing. He does remodeling. So he was telling me about the cook, like left. And he was making, I don't know, they were paying the guy like $13 an hour. So now, with the prices, they haven't raised their prices very much, but say a dinner went from $12 to $16, you know, or $16.50, which still isn't, you know, horrible at all. And the cook probably does, how many, in a good Chinese place, how many dinners can a cook make in an hour? Greg, you know this, is it 50, 40? If you really know what you're doing and you prep yourself well? Well, let's say the guy's now producing $200 more an hour than he was two months or 6 months before with COVID, the guy goes, I don't understand why the guy left. We gave him a raise, and I didn't ask him how much. We raised him to $18.50 from $12.50, and I'm sitting there going, you got to do better than that. You're not even. What can the guy do for $18.50? If he's got to pay to park, it's his first 2 hours, for God's sake. I mean, it's. I did a thing, Dan, and I shouldn't do this stuff. This is during COVID, and everybody's bitching about, which, you know, rightfully so, the people that are getting their $600, was it $600 a week you were getting, stay home or something, whatever the number was, I forget. But
yeah, depending on which state you were in, I think some states were even paying more than that.
Well, so I went through in the state of Illinois, which is ridiculously expensive for a lot of stuff. I'm sure it's not as bad as Boston or New York, but I said, okay, if you went out, and if your uncle gave you $5,000 to go buy a junk car just to get to work, to get your ass off the sofa, what would it cost you? And I said, okay, so the tax on the car is like 7%, so you're up to $350. The title cost, transfer of title, is like $1.50. The license is something else. Is another 100 and some. The city sticker if you got a parking pad. I basically was up to the first 65 hours at $10 or $11 an hour that you had to work was just to transfer the car over to you if somebody gave you the money. I mean, it's so far and away past. I mean, at Pullman, guys were making, you know, $35,000 a year in 1978 when a car was $4,500 and a house was $85,000. Like you say, it was double your, and that's if the wife wasn't working. I mean, we're not even on the same planet.
Right. And it's the same concept as friends who are inheriting houses from parents or, you know, that have passed away and the house needs a lot of work. And, you know, even though there might be value in the property because the price has gone up, getting the contractors paying, like, it ends up becoming a lot more expensive than you realize when you, you know, for a lot of people I know who have inherited property that needs upkeep, needs your insurance rates are up, your utilities are up, your property taxes are up, so it isn't as much of a win, if you will, or it's not as, you know, again, is it really a gift to get a house that needs a lot of work?
Or if you get an old house in the city, like the one, I live in a building and I kind of manage it because I enjoy doing it and want to keep up on what the construction world is. You know what, Dan? I think if the guy gave it to me, I'd say no.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm getting at.
I mean, you
at.
Could pay Audrey and I, it was a house that was dated in Oak Lawn, and it had to be the same builder as the people who built my parents' house. I could just tell all the
yeah.
And, but it was yeah. It was bigger and it was a lot nicer, and actually a couple parts weren't, but most of it was nicer. And Audrey says, "Yeah, well, there's 30 windows in the place.
Yeah,
they're 1,200 a piece." And yeah. I go, 1,200.
Yeah.
I can get guys doing a little bit better than that, but I mean a roof can be 10 grand, could be 90 grand if you got a really nice one. I mean, we're talking, one of my buddies from the hood, the guy's name is Rob, played quarterback, I think, at Eastern Illinois or something, real nice guy. He's in the remodeling business, and he does really, really well, does big places. He goes, "Tom, don't ever forget, if you buy a house cheap and you're going to flip it," he goes, "a plasterboard sheet costs the same amount in a $200,000 house as it does in a $1 million house.
Yep.
Be careful at the low end because you can't repair them and sell them."
Right.
I mean, it's...
And you're not going to get your money back.
No, you're not getting your money back.
Right.
So how does this... I think both of us think that there's going to be somewhat of a comeuppance someday in people going back to the mean on both ends. Now, I don't want to see a 1929 fiasco where the people with wealth come flying back to everybody else. Yet I don't really see in the cards the people in the bottom 50% all of a sudden getting 5% raises for the next 10 years a year. I don't. Do you?
No, but I think there's been improvement. We're seeing improvement. It's gradual. It's very, very slow. I think we're moving in the right direction with what's happened with employment, for example, what's happened in certain parts of the country with housing, for example. Where things are coming back a little bit more in line, but they've been so out of line for so long. And I think that there'll be some improvement. I don't know what happens. I can't predict what's going to happen, especially to people who are struggling, to make ends meet. One thing, as I mentioned, I started alluding to earlier, was sort of a shift in demographics. People move into places that are affordable, or people move into states or other places that maybe provide benefits, insurance. You know, some states, you know, have better plans than others. Same thing is happening with immigrants coming in, moving to places where they, you know, where their state is able to help them out a little more. So that dynamic is also going on at the same time that may help some people out, but it's certainly not across the board.
Well, Dan, in Chicago area, and again, I'm jaundiced by my view here, is that we have, I'll use the term, some manufacturing it's improving. I don't know whether it's coming back or whatever. I have no idea whether it used to be someplace else overseas and now it's coming back. So there is a pretty serious demand for, because my nephew's in this business, for guys that can work in, you know, say metal shops and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
And they're paying, you know, if you want to make $40 an hour, 45, you can do it, which would be, well, $20 an hour is $40,000 a year, right? So,
yeah.
So I mean, you're 80 to 100, you know, in these places. If you do some overtime, and maybe more if you're actually really good at it. Somehow or another, the Chicago school system that used to provide all
yes.
that at CVS and those places,
yep.
Are not providing any of these people. I mean, the last three or four people they hired are from like the Navy, you know,
yeah.
and stuff. So I mean, in places like Boston. Is the school system able to feed the industries that are there? I mean, here
the
it
trade
appears
industries, yeah,
we're
no,
at.
It's a really good question. The vocational schools have closed, right?
They're a shadow of their former self.
Right, a small shadow of
yeah.
their former self. So one thing that hopefully is coming back, I was very pleasantly surprised when my cousin's son mentioned that he took a personal finance class in high school. I was really happy to hear that. I think that there are programs now that allow younger kids to be able to have exposure to those industries in certain schools. They're going to be generally in the better school districts. There are also companies, and we had invested in one that was called Lincoln. It was a trade school. The training is just not what it used to be, the accessibility to training. What's happening to a lot of companies now in places that are in manufacturing, that are in, is that they're providing training, and the people who are teaching are the older guys, you know, the people who have been there for a while. They're providing training, and a lot of them like to do that, which, so it's a win-win if you have a seasoned employee that's helping the new guys coming in. providing those skills, you know, taking them out in the field. There is what I'm seeing, ironically, with some clients and some people in the Boston area, is a shift away from, you know, you're not getting those benefits in the tech industry. So whatever level you are in the workforce, there's more excitement about construction, manufacturing, than there has been in the past. So we're seeing that as well. It's the training that, I think in Boston, just because it is a college town, their training tends to be very good. There's a lot of emphasis on education, no matter what field you're in. So there's a lot of on-the-job training.
Is there primary and secondary school systems in Boston really good too, or no?
Depending on what town you're in, there's some fantastic school systems. The town where my sister lives, with Belmont, which is where Kenny grew up, people are paying, you know, they move in and they rent, and there's a lot of foreign people that come that pay astronomical rents to bring their kids to these schools. So the public school system is really top tier. I mean, the people who live in the city will tend to send their kids to private schools if they can afford it. But I'd say in general, there's a huge amount of emphasis on education in Massachusetts.
I have a couple of guys saying that Chicago could be the new biotech hub, and I'm going, from where? We need to straighten out the I'll use the term human capital problems,
right?
Before, because those are the places that have, you know, there's a reason why Silicon Valley was in Silicon Valley.
Right. You've got the experience. You've got the, in Boston, you had the colleges, you had MIT, so you have the research and all of that that starts there, and that it just kind of perpetuates. But it has moved, just as our industry, remember, was concentrated in the Northeast and Chicago, right?
Yep.
So you had Boston, New York, and Chicago. That was it. Maybe a little bit in L.A. And then
actually more in Frisco than L.A.
And my company had an office in both locations. But depending on what part of the business you were in, the high-yield bond business was big in L.A., so I spent a lot of time
really
out there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Mike Milken, you remember?
Oh, yeah, I do remember the name.
Yeah, so that was that whole scene. But
he had a bad toupee, I know.
Yeah, interesting guy.
Yeah.
Definitely interesting guy. Interesting times back then.
Well, you know what? Next week, let's talk a little bit about him, because he's quite a history piece.
Yeah, I have a lot of experience there. I've been to some of his Predators balls, and very
I think he might have gone to jail because he ruffled the wrong feathers.
I think so. I mean,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but who just put out the book on him and said he was never guilty? Very well researched book. I talked about it on the air. I was going to read it.
Yeah,
you know,
I definitely
Greg will find out, because somebody's written. He said the guy should never have been in jail.
The thing that he did, and where a lot of us really supported what he was doing, is that he provided a lot of jobs, right? So the high yield market provided capital to companies that may not have been able to raise it on their own through the equity markets or even through banks. So it did provide, it allowed companies to thrive, and it also provided a lot of jobs. So it was good for the economy up until the time it was, again, greed took over.
I think greed took over a little, but really what Dan just said in layman's terms, Dan's talking like a financier, which he is in those days, if you wanted money, you either went to the Goldman, Morgan Stanley's, and got basically your pants pulled off.
Yeah.
Or you went to the banks and you got your shirt pulled off.
Right.
And he essentially provided a third way. And to say that he ruffled a few feathers is an understatement, because he was somewhat egotistical on top of it. And I think they laid in wait for him like a snake, and as soon as he did something wrong, they were all over him. And I think that's what the book basically. We got to find that one, because we should talk about
it.
I need to read it, because I'll bet I'll agree with everything the guy says.
Same here.
Anyway, Dan, thank you. SP Futures down 2 and NASDAQ Futures down 11. I really enjoyed the show today. God, why aren't you here like every week? This is fun.
Yeah. It's
isn't it much better in here, except you read my mind? That's a problem.
Well, I also enjoy hearing. I don't listen every day to Lou's part, but I enjoy hearing him, because it's easy to tie in what he's saying to what we do. And he's coming from someplace totally different than
me. It's amazing how people come from totally different, but when we sort of meet in the middle on a lot of stuff.
Absolutely, yeah.
Anyway, Greg, thank you. Back tomorrow, Stacks and Jacks.
It's like I took the wrong week. Quit drinking.
And that's all, folks.